I want to say just a couple things about MCMC. And we're going to do an exercise because we need exercise at this time of day. We're going to talk about some simple allele frequency models in JAGs. And we're really probably only going to get to talk about one. And as I've said a few times today, we sometimes have closed form solutions. Most of the time, in the case of the structure model, we have to use MCMC methods. MCMC is Markov chain Monte Carlo. So the Monte Carlo is the chance part. The Markov chain is simply that your parameter values at a current step in the chain are some function of a previous value in the chain. It might be an independence chain, so that they don't depend on the immediately previous value, but they come for some distribution. You have a rule for how you're going to sample from this chain and how you're going to update values. And so the typical situation is that we're going to use that tool. JAGS is a piece of software that stands alone from R. Okay, it's a little engine. It has its own language. It has its own interpreter that looks like R, but it's not quite R. One of the authors of R and one of the main developers is responsible for it. It's an open source implementation of the Bugs language. And I can't take any blame for the naming of these things. These are a set of languages for sampling, okay, and for doing MCMC. These are software for MCMC. The RJAGS part is an interface between R and that JAGS engine outside of it. And so what we want to do when we use JAGS or Bugs, actually, is that we want to specify a model, and we want to interact with that model from within R. Without getting in too deep, JAGS is very, very useful for being able to specify models really easily. So I think if you could easily teach an introductory statistics class and do all the tests of means and linear models and the basic things in JAGS. And in fact, it's a useful exercise to teach yourself how to program those types of traditional statistics tests and models that you want to perform inference on in JAGS. It's easy. It works well. There are lots of people using it. Okay, there's a ton of resources for it on the web. So it's useful to learn the syntax. It's not very hard. If I can find a copy of a relevant page from our notes, I guess I'll just say, we've been specifying models today, right? We're writing down something like this, and we're making decisions about how things are distributed. That's why I had that little assignment of saying, okay, go find the equation from structure and ask yourself, how are these different things distributed? That is the bulk of the work, in some ways, for doing Bayesian analysis. Figuring out that hierarchy and writing, as much as this is an equation, writing that down. Okay, and then making decisions about how each one of those terms is distributed. Because if you have that, it is very easy to translate that into Bugs or JAGS code. Okay, and to allow you to be able to do an analysis without understanding how to implement an MCMC from scratch, truly, where you implement things the way the authors of Structure did when they wrote the C code for that program. Okay, so that's a little bit of background. I had mentioned earlier that there are different algorithms for MCMC. Yes, thanks. So I want to mention just two. Gibbs. And we'll refer to those sometimes as Gibbs samples. or metropolis. And one variant of metropolis is called Metropolis Hastings. And so I'm going to sketch some of the attributes of these. We can't get in too deep to fully understand how they work. It would be cool if we could. But Gibbs is based on conjugacy. Every one of our samples will be from the posterior distribution. That is, we don't have to get into some of the issues that arise in the metropolis and metropolis Hastings updates. For example, we don't have to evaluate mixing. Okay, and I haven't said what that is, but that means something to a few of you. That is, how often do I accept new values into my chain? Okay, so mixing is that there's regular updates relative to the current value. Whereas if you've looked at a trace of parameter values through MC-MC steps and it gets stuck, it means it's not mixing. There are no new updates. If you have a component of the model that has conjugacy, and you know one example of that, if you are multiplying a binomial times a beta, that portion of the model and the parameters in it can be updated by Gibbs sampling. And every parameter that is sampled stochastically in the model will be from the posterior distribution. That sounds good. That's going to make our model be more efficient. We're not going to have to run it as long and discard some fraction of the values. We're going to very quickly be able to characterize the posterior distribution for those parameters. So that recommends Gibbs. And the reason I'm mentioning this is that JAGs and bugs will be able to recognize conjugacy. You're going to say that this component of my model is binomial and this component is beta, and it is recognizing that you're multiplying those together, so it will do Gibbs updates in that part of the model. You don't have to tell it to. It figures this out for you. Okay. Alternatively, there are going to be metropolis updates. These are updates that are probabilistic. Okay. So you're going to propose a new value for the parameter, and it's going to be retained in a probabilistic fashion. Okay? There are two different categories of metropolis updates. There are independence chains. And there are random walk chains. I mentioned this in passing earlier. So when you provide tuning parameters to a piece of software, okay, where that might affect the mixing of the model, it's because you need to propose new values, and those are going to be accepted into the chain with the metropolis algorithm that we're going to leave as a black box for today. The proposal of new values could be independent of the current value. That is, that for the whole chain, they're going to continue to come from the same distribution. They're independent of where you are in the chain. You could be at the 10,000th step, they're still coming from the same distribution. A random walk chain is what you would think it would be, is that the new value that is proposed is a function of the current value. Okay? And so that there can be a random walk. So let's just suppose that something's being updated by a random walk. And this is the history of that parameter over MC-MC steps. This is theta, our parameter, and this is MC-MC step. So this is a random walk chain right here, where the you can see that right away is that there's some autocorrelation of the values, right? With an independent chain, there wouldn't be any autocorrelation of values. How is this mixing? How would we characterize the extent to which we're proposing new values? Is it mixing rapidly or slowly? Slowly, right? We're kind of drifting around. So one of the things that we could do is that depending if we had control of the mixing parameters in this case, is that we could increase the range of values around the current value that could be proposed. Because clearly, values that are far from the current value can be in the chain. Okay? Alternatively, what if we had a random walk chain that looked like this? It's mixing very slowly. I drew one update. Okay, it was one value, and then some point there now is a new value. One of the reasons for this is that the proposal values that are being tried are so improbable that they never accepted into the chain. Okay, and that the tuning parameter needs to be tightened down so that you're sampling close to those values and so that they're coming from the likely posterior distribution. That's a sketch of MCMC diagnostics. And Gibbs, where every sample comes from the posterior distribution and these issues do not arise as to mixing, and Metropolis-Hastings, where updates are probabilistic, okay, and where we do need to pay attention to the performance of the model and the extent to which we're getting close to an answer. Now, I mentioned in passing earlier that Metropolis-Hastings, or just Metropolis, meets criteria that ensure we will converge to and sample from the posterior distribution. This mixing that I was talking about and trying to tune it does not mean that we're not going to get to the right answer. It just might mean that we will take a very long time to get there. We'll be inefficient. So you're not changing your ability to recover the posterior in a fundamental sense by changing tuning parameters. You're not changing your answer. You're just changing the efficiency with which you converge on and obtain samples from the posterior distribution. By converge to, what I mean is that there is going to be a single initial MCMC step. It has to start somewhere for your parameter. It might start somewhere bad, okay? And there is going to be a walk that takes you into parameter space where you might settle down, where the chain will settle down and will converge. And the algorithm, the Metropolis-Hastings algorithm, ensures that if you run the chain long enough, it will converge and you will be taking samples from the posterior distribution. I said flippantly that this could take a million years. There's no way to prove how long an algorithm will take to sample from it. So we have to use diagnostics. We have to look at things. It's a good idea to look at the traces of your parameters and to understand how things are working. Lots of software, and so it does. That works if you're doing fairly small problems. If you're using JAGS to estimate a linear model type of thing, but in many cases you're using software that a developer wrote, And you need to depend on that developer to have written things so that it converges within a PhD, or maybe converges within a week or something along those lines. And that they've worked with the tuning parameters and been smart, and they've done the diagnostics. Very few programs make it easy for you to dump out the history of all of your parameters in the model and to look at them. Okay? But it would be nice if you could look at them. Finally, notice that I didn't write likelihood over here. This is not a trace of the likelihood of the model. That's something else you can follow. You can see, is the likelihood of my model improving as I'm running, and has it stabilized? That's kind of a summary overall in terms of diagnostics, but it's not a trace for individual parameters and how they're mixing. And in fact, it itself, you're just looking at that value. It's not a parameter, right? You're just looking at the likelihood. Okay. I mentioned earlier that we would want to burn in. If you have a trace or a sample history that includes an obvious period in which parameters are bad before they appear to converge, you want to, would want to exclude these, okay? And developers, people who write software can do that for you, and or they can, you can provide that as a parameter when you write the, when you run the software. How many steps do you want to run the program, and how many steps do you want to discard? Finally, I'll mention thinning, which is the possibility of discarding samples, particularly if you have autocorrelation and you don't want to fill up a hard drive, you can thin. It could take a million years. Obviously, it doesn't always take a million years. Some problems converge very rapidly, okay? And you can get good estimates. And the problems that we're going to work on, you will not be able to see a burn-in or that any of the samples need to be discarded. It is right on top of them, in part because of the way JAGS works. Okay, it actually does the burn-in in an adapting phase for you. So what I said was that JAGS is a really simple way to specify models, and it handles the algorithmic portion as to whether things are going to be Gibbs or Metropolis Hastings updates. And it is does some work to find out, to do some diagnostics on how things are mixing that involve Metropolis Hastings. You lose some control, okay? You are not in control of how the updates happen, and so that comes at a cost. It comes at a benefit in terms of you don't have to tell it what to do. And in many cases, that will be just fine. What I've done for us to do with maybe the next 35 minutes is in that commands.r file, if you keep going down, why don't I put that on the screen, and we'll talk about it a little bit. We're looking at section 5.2, this illustration of MCMC. In there, I perform a very simple population genetic simulation, okay, where we have 1,000 loci, 20 individuals in each population, three populations, and an FST of 0.2. We have an ancestral allele frequency at all of our N loci that has a beta 0.4, 0.4 distribution. So just as a refresher, that's going to be U-shaped, okay? So we're sampling allele frequencies at 1,000 loci. R beta is the interface to the beta distribution that generates random deviates. Okay, so we're going to draw 1,000 numbers from a beta distribution with 0.4, 0.4. And what I'm doing here is I'm simulating data in exactly the same way that we're going to analyze them. Okay? So it should mean we should be able to recover the parameters that we simulated, right? That'd be nice. So SIMP is the simulated allele frequencies at all these loci in each of our three populations. Those are a function of the simulated pi, the ancestral allele frequency at that locus, times our FST. Okay, this is the theta parameter that we had. I've just expanded it into the 1 over FST minus 1. Okay, so this is just the way we did it. And so we're transforming our ancestral allele frequencies, pi, into the allele frequencies in the three derived populations with some variance given by a beta distribution. Sweet. One of the things that you should do then when you get to this point is let's plot the ancestral allele frequency against the allele frequency in the first derived population. Okay, this will give you an idea of how much have allele frequencies, would they drift, or could a thousand of them drift, with an FST of 0.2. Then we need to simulate genotypes on top of that. This is kind of some ugly code to get this done very efficiently. It happens fast without a bunch of for loops. I wrote a little function to remove invariant loci. And that's because JAGS has fits when all the probability density falls on one point. Okay? So we have to make a concession here and go through. And if we ended up simulating a fixed locus in a population, we're going to convert one of the homozygotes to a heterozygote. Okay, just to introduce one allele copy so it's not fixed in there, just because simulating data that include fixed loci gives the sampler trouble. And probably, but not definitely, you wouldn't include fixed loci in your estimation of allele frequencies. But maybe you would. It has difficulty, and this is one of the limitations of JAGS. So that's what we've done. We've simulated genotypes right here by the time, and this takes less than a second to copy all that in and paste it, and you've got allele frequencies for 1,000 loci. It's kind of cool. I've done this a few times, but I mean, there's no forward genetic simulation. This is the allele frequency variation that you would expect in an infinite islands model with this FST. So it seems useful. But that's just that. We now want to then load the JAGS interface from R. So that makes loads up that library. With this function, JAGS.model, we specify a file on our disk. Okay, so wherever you are in R, you need to give the right path to get to this. And that depends on how you work with R. But you should be able to give a path to that file. Okay, it will depend on it. This is a file name on your disk. And then you need to give it a list here where these are the things that are going to be passed off to that model. The end int that I defined, the number of loci, the number of populations, our genotypic data. And we're going to pass it an option, the number of chains we're going to run. And so we're going to run two chains, so two independent analyses. And we can compare them to one another. And if they are sampling from a converged distribution, they should look just like one another, right? We should be able to put them end to end to see whether we're converging. If they're in different places in parameter space, we haven't converged. Okay, and I have code for that just below on how to look at that. This just initializes the model. This is the phase in which it does some adapting in terms of figuring out what the update should be. It still takes a little bit of time. And then we have another function where we take samples from that model. And we have to specify which variables we want to track. Okay, what do we want to have output? We don't have to have output all the model's parameters. And here I'm keeping track of the allele frequency and theta. We're going to do 1,000 generations, and we're not dropping any of the values. Okay, so I'm thinning. We're retaining every single value. If we wanted every other one, we could say thin equals 2. So this way, we'll have 1,000 samples from our model. So I haven't told you what this locus diversity looks like. Maybe you've already peeked. This is a JAGS model. I'm going to put my Emacs into R mode so it gets colorized. And so this is how we specify our model. And it follows one of our models from earlier today. For allele frequencies in a population, we just simulated three populations that come from an ancestral population. Here we have a binomial probability for genotypes given the allele frequency in that population. Allele frequencies are beta distributed with theta theta. It's, and it's a locus specific theta. I'm sorry, a population specific theta. And we then have a prior on our thetas that's uniform between 1 in 1,000 to 1,000. Okay, so it's a fairly simple model. These for loops are a little bit funky in terms of what they do. You're not really running a for loop, but you're basically generating all those parameters. Okay, all those genotypes, I, J, K. So if there are 1,000 loci, there'll be 1,000 times the number of populations times 3 times the number of individuals. So there are that many parameters for genotype. Those are the data. Genotype is not a parameter in this case. It is our data. But then the I by K are the loci by population, so our 1,000 loci by 3 populations. So that's the model. It's pretty simple, and it corresponds to what I said, is that we have a model specification that we wrote down earlier, and we just have to put this little tilde notation that means this thing is distributed that way. Okay, on the right side. And that actually comes, that's what you do in R for linear models, right? You say the response variable is a function of, here the tilde means that it is distributed as. And then I'm going to cut you loose in just a minute. So that's the model, which we've taken samples from it, and then I have some code there for plotting some of the parameters. And so what I'd like you to do is to work to the right there. Okay, execute all that code, make your plots, look at those means and quantiles there at the end, and look at those two questions. Do the chains appear to have converged for theta? And what is the estimate of mean theta for the allele frequency spectrum in each population? Okay, so try this out. Obviously, this is a snapshot of what you can do, but let's see what you think.
Colors?
Yes. Okay. And so we plotted, we had 1,000 samples from each chain, that plot command. I know it's really abstract. The way samples are returned from JAGS are multidimensional, okay? And so there's all that different indexing that's happening there, which is why I gave you code for how you could pull out individual parameters in loci. And so what we did there is we plotted the first chain for theta and then the second chain for it. And so did it look like they were converged? Yeah, and so what did we do? We only took 1,000 samples, so it didn't take 1,000,000 years. Okay, we don't have to be sad. Okay, so it works. There's a Bayesian estimation problem with 1,000 loci that this was lickety-split. Okay, it looks like it's mixing well. We didn't thin at all. It's really jumping around very rapidly. It looks like things are going well. What do we know about this model? We know it's binomial beta. So that portion of the model, it's updating by Gibbs. The only portion that it's going to have to update by Metropolis Hastings involves that uniform prior, okay? That the prior for theta, okay? And so there is a Metropolis Hastings, but obviously it has tuned its proposal values that it's doing a very good job, and that the theta is updating very rapidly as we go through the model.
So if you wanted to use JAGS, does it give you information back about what it used the Gibbs versus the...
I don't know. That would be a good... Oh, whether it used what types of updates it did, that I don't think you could find out, but... and you can't... to my knowledge, you can't control it. That's where you give up some control. Yes?
It says... I'm sort of confused about what the JAGS model was trying to find. And so, like, that's a theta that it gave you. And then earlier when we were doing the, when we were developing put in all those variables, FFC, and get in the plot. There was a theta parameter in there, too, which,
right, yeah.
Like the 1 over FST minus 1.
That was a different theta.
That's a different theta.
Yes.
Okay.
This is just, in this case, we have a beta distribution that just has a single number there. It could be 1, 1. We could have constrained it. We could have gotten rid of all that uniform stuff. But we know the solution to that model, right? We know that if we put beta 1, 1, and we don't have a hyper prior on theta, we have an analytical solution for that probability distribution. That actually would be a nice little check for yourself if you wanted to comment all this out and make that 1, 1. You know that that should give you a beta back, right? Because we solved that analytically before. This is a binomial beta that we did earlier. Okay, and so you should be able to compare that to the closed form solution. It would be possible to do that. More questions about this model? There's another model, if you keep reading, the locus F model. And you guys may have noticed that I was typing and doing stuff yesterday. I wasn't writing email. I was trying to get that model to work. Because we simulated data with an F statistic here, right? Or an FST, and we generated data according to a known model. And I was trying to recover FST, and it's consistently underestimating it. And I suspect it's because I didn't wait for a million years. And I wanted to have a problem in class that would be solvable in about a minute, okay, and that would get samples. I suspect that it needs to be run much longer and that my lack of control of JAGS is frustrating me, okay? The way I've usually specified this model is in C, and it works, okay? But here, I think if you run it, and I encourage you to when you go back home and if you can tolerate doing some more of this stuff, is to look at that next model and see what you get. And what I predict is that you will get FSTs back if you only sample as many as I've put in there that are about as half as much as what it should be. And I don't know why. And I looked at it until late last night, and Zach looked at it last night, even though he's in the field. He looked at it on his cell phone. And we can't figure out what's wrong with it. So I think it's right. I think it's a limitation of JAGS. It could be wrong. So if any of you find the error, please tell me. So those are some of the things about that model. I think JAGS is a good tool for learning, okay? You can do little experiments like this. You could do this for your other very simple problems. And it's not hard to read the syntax and to figure out how to specify models. So I really encourage you to experiment with it and to teach yourself how to use JAGS to do simple problems, okay? And to play with different assumptions that you might want to experiment with. I have to think for a minute where I am. I'm starting to lose track of things a little bit. I appreciate your willingness. I know it's a long day to stick with me on these things and to be dragged through various stuff at a pretty fast pace, so thanks for that. And then I'll turn it over to Matt. Yeah.